Redemption, redeemed how I love to proclaim it. And then we sang a song of Christ's return. We sang a song of the somberness of eternity. And now we sang a song on standing firm and in the power of God. I'd like to take our attention this morning to a couple of incidents in David's life. Let's turn to 1 Samuel chapter 24. The life of David is the relationship of David and Saul is very interesting because of the dynamics that are there. There is Saul as king, David is anointed king, and David has Saul has this motive. Continually trying to kill David, put him out of the way, and David refuses to touch Saul's life. In 1 Samuel 24, I'd like to start reading with the first verse here. And it came to pass when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, he had been chasing David around the mountain, and then he got the message that the Philistines have invaded the land and that he must return and defend his country and against the Philistines. And so he did. He left David go, and he went and fought the Philistines. And now it says, and when Saul was returned from following the Philistines, it was told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men upon the rocks of the wild goats. Then he came to the sheepcotes by the way where there was a cave. And Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men remained in the sides of the cave. And the men of David said unto him, behold, the day which the Lord said unto thee, behold, I will deliver thine enemy into thine hand, that thou mayest do to him as it seemeth good to thee. Then David arose and cut off the skirt of Saul's robe privately. And it came to pass afterward that David's heart smote him because he had cut off Saul's skirt. And he said unto his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch forth mine hand against him, seeing that he is the anointed of the Lord. So David stayed his servants with these words and suffered them not to rise against Saul. But Saul arose up out of the cave and went on his way. David also arose afterward, and he went out of the cave and cried after Saul, saying, my lord the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David stooped with his face to the earth and bowed himself. I'm just going to stop there for a moment. But can you imagine in this dangerous game of hunt and seek, that hide and seek rather, that it was much more, it was a deadly game. It was not a game. It was life that was being hunted. And David and his men were in the cave. And probably as dark as could be. And they could stand in the shadows there and be out of sight while Saul came into the cave. And here he was probably by himself in this case. And his life was completely in David's hand. And David's friends interpreted that as the Lord delivering Saul into his hand. And David refused that interpretation. And I can only think of one reason why. And that went back into the time when David was anointed king. And when David was anointed king, Saul was still king. But David was the least, the smallest, the youngest, and probably the least esteemed of his brothers. But when Samuel poured that vial of oil on his head, it says the Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. And the very next verse says that the Spirit of the Lord departed from Saul. But David had... That was the thing I think was an anchor point for David, that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him when he was anointed king, and I think he thought that same thing must have happened for Saul. And it did happen in a little different way. Excuse me, in a little different way for Saul. But that was an anchor point in his life, and he was not going to touch the Lord's anointed. No matter if Saul was seeking his life and hunting him out as a flea and so on, all of those things were in the hands of God, and he was not going to touch his life. But he did do several things that made it very obvious that he was not going to touch his life. And one of those things was in this account here where he cut off his robe and held it as a souvenir that he could have killed David, that he could have killed Saul, but he refused. And he went out and he showed it to Saul. I can just imagine, I like to imagine, that he shouted after him and that Saul felt very humbled by the fact that here he was pursuing this man and his life was right there. And he let him go. And all he had, all David had to show was this piece of fabric or material or, you know, David felt badly about it because, you know, Saul couldn't go to Spector's or some other store and buy another piece of fabric. The damage was done, but he still had his life. And it was very significant that this moment is recorded right here for us to read. You know, David spared Saul's life because of the anchor point that David had, that he was not going to touch the Lord's anointed. And in spite of the advice that he had gotten from his men, and then. We, in the next chapter of Samuel, is the account of David watching out for Nabal's sheep and asking for some pay for that and Nabal refusing to give him what he wanted, and he is ready to slaughter all of Nabal's family and children and everything involved. He had no such compunction for Nabal as he did for Saul. But then in the very next chapter, chapter 26, we have another very interesting account that Saul is again pursuing David. I'd like to start reading with verse 2, chapter 26. And Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. I don't know if it's the same 3,000 men, but the other chapter spoke of 3,000 chosen men. This again speaks of 3,000 men. That's quite a few when you think about it. What's our attendance this morning? 155. Multiply it times 20. Make quite a crowd, wouldn't it? To see all these men going after David. And Saul pitched in the hill of Hachiliah, which is before Jamishin, by the way, but David abode in the wilderness, and he saw that Saul came out after him into the wilderness. Remember that on the other account, we didn't read it, but Saul really humbled himself, and he said, "This, you know, I can see that you're more righteous. I know that you're going to be king." And he said all of that, but those words were empty words. And here we have him pursuing after David again to take his life. Verse 4, David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul was come in very deed. And David arose and came to the place where Saul had pitched, and David beheld the place where Saul lay, and Abner the son of Ner, the captain of the host, and Saul lay in the trench, and the people pitched round about. Then answered David and said to Ahimelech the Hittite, and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother of Joab, saying, "Who will go down with me to Saul to the camp?" And Abishai said, "I will go down with thee." And David and Abishai came to the people by night and beheld Saul sleeping within the trench and his spear stuck in the ground at his bolster. But Abner and the people lay round about him. Then said Abishai to David, "God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me Smite him, I pray thee, with the spear, even to the earth at once, and I will not smite again. Excuse me, and I will not smite him the second time. Then David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David said there, furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed, but I pray thee, take thou now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water, and let us go. So David took the spear and the cruse of water from Saul's bolster, and they got them away, and no man saw it nor knew it, neither awaked, for they were all asleep, because a deep sleep from the Lord was fallen upon them. Then David went over to the other side and stood on the top of the hill afar off, in a great space being between them. And David cried to the people and to Abner, the son of Ner, saying, answerest thou not, Abner? And Abner answered and said, who art thou that criest to the king? Then said David to Abner, art thou not a valiant man? And who is like unto thee in Israel? Wherefore then hast thou not kept the Lord thy king? For there came one of the people in to destroy the Lord thy king. And David goes on to tell him what he has done. And there he has the spear in his hand and the cruse of water as proof that he was right there at Saul's side and could have killed him once again. And again, David proves that his anchor point is the fact that he will not touch the Lord's anointed, but that he has no malice against Saul. And Saul again says in verse 21, I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly. Then David answered and said, behold the king's spear. Let one of the men come over and fetch it. And the Lord render to every man his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord delivered thee into mine hand today, but I would not stretch forth thine hand against the Lord's anointed. And David continued to live the thing that he felt was important. I think it's very interesting that he says, let the young men come over and fetch the spear. Earlier, Saul, they were in closer proximity, and maybe David didn't trust Saul anymore after this. But he didn't trust him. And in spite of the fact that Saul said, I have sinned, and return. There was a reluctance there to take him at his word because of the continued betrayal that Saul had done to David, and so that eventually became a part of David's life also. And now in verse 27, verse 1, and David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. Isn't that amazing? After those two incidents, and probably many more that we don't even have record of, David finally gets to the end of himself, and he says, I'm going to die by the hand of Saul. Discouragement. Isn't that so true to life for us? You know, sometimes we're in the battle, and there's maybe even after some good things happen, that it just seems like it's too much, and we're tempted to give up. Sometimes, you know, when we look at the struggles that we're facing in churches, different relationship problems, different issues, and different things that people hold important that other people don't, and other people hold important that we don't. And, you know, I think, what's going to happen here? how can we continue to work? I think I have to think sometimes of the verse that Jesus said when Peter made that great confession, "Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus said, "I will build my church." And Jesus said, "I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." In other words, the church is going to be built and nothing that Satan can throw it at is going to destroy the church. And so sometimes we need to focus on that part of it. And the church is being built. The church always was being built since the time of Christ. And when we can read about stories, when we can read and interact with people that are in that building, we don't have to succumb to discouragement like David did here, where he says, "I'm going to die one day by the hand of Saul." You know, certainly it seemed that way. Saul had all the protection, it seemed like, because David was not going to touch him. But we know the story how that David was a man that was blessed of the Lord, and even in the New Testament, he's saying that he was a man after God's heart. But he was discouraged at this point. And sometimes we can find ourselves discouraged, but our anchor point can be in the fact that Jesus said, "I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." Jesus is the one that had the power to lay down his life. He had the power to rise again from the tomb. And certainly, he has this power to build a church in our day, if we can, and be a part of that. So our identity must be with Christ, and our anchor point must be in following him and being redeemed by his blood. And then we're a part of that church. And we don't have to give in to discouragement, but we can be a part of his bride. Let's praise the Lord for that this morning. Let's come to the Lord in prayer.